This is Hemet.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. Please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast to support the show. Get your bonus episodes. Get ad-free episodes. Listen, we got your emails about the volume not working the way you want it to work. We're working on it. If any of you are sound tech people, give us a hello and help us if you can, and we will take your help or something. But we tried playing with some stuff, and we'll see if it works.
It sounds okay on our end. So that's what's happening. He's pointing at his microphone as if he can't hear me. You can hear me.
No one can hear you unless you're screaming at the top of your lungs. Okay. I do want to say thank you to some of our more recent supporters. They include Patreon supporters. They include Joe H., Blake R., Robert F., Tiffany F., Platypus Bear, Jordan H., Roger, Kirby C., Kara R., and Christy R. Thank you so much for your support. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, gang.
And I figured, do you want to jump right into it?
Does that note say Jesus wept?
No, but close.
I would love that.
Jesus did weep for many reasons. This is one of them. Have you heard of Russell Moore?
The judge?
Sure, no.
Or the...
No, that's Roy Moore. He's the pedophile guy from Alabama. Not him.
Okay.
So Russell Moore used to be a leader in the Southern Baptist Convention. He headed up their religion, what was it called? Like their ethics board.
Oh, boy.
Which, that's a full-time job.
And his... Historically, it feels like people who work on ethics boards are...
Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. Got all the words in there.
That...
So he used to do that. Worked for the Southern Baptist Convention. Mm-hmm. Then he's like, you guys are being a little too racist and too sexual harassy.
Even for this gentleman.
Even for him. So he's like, I'm going to leave. Mm. I can't be with this anymore. Now he works as editor-in-chief of Christianity Today. Okay,
fine.
Which
is pretty good publication,
right? I mean, they do good news work. Yeah. I disagree with their opinions, but whatever.
Sure, but the journalism is
But the journalism's fine. So he's the editor-in-chief of that. He does a regular opinion column there, and usually it's more of a, hey, fellow Christians, what are we doing here? Okay, fine. So recently, I think he came out with a book, I'm not sure, but he did an interview on NPR, and they talked about the fact that, it seems like they talk about demographic changes, number of people affiliated with Southern Baptist, Christianity in general is going down. You know, what's going on there? What are the struggles people face in Southern Baptist churches, in conservative Christianity, in evangelical churches? Mm-hmm. And one of the things he talked about is that it's kind of weird because the teachings of Jesus are not being embraced by the people in the pews, he said.
What? No, it's almost like the joke I make every single week on this very podcast.
That was part of my reaction to hearing the interview and reading stuff he has written about this, which is, dude, we've been telling you all this for
a
very long time.
Here?
Yeah. So his basic argument, and I'll read you his quote in a second. He said, like, if you tell Christians you're supposed to turn the other cheek or help marginalized people, they would basically call you weak. So here's the actual quotation. All right. And again, he's talking about how so many white evangelicals have gone full MAGA that if you talk about stuff Jesus talked about on the Sermon of the Mount, where he said, feed the poor, embrace peace, help the least of these, they need you, all that stuff. He said,
the way you treat the least of us is the way you treat me, or something like that.
Something like that. So he's saying,
quote the Bible.
He's saying, if we said that from the pulpit, and granted, he's not a pastor, but he's saying, I've talked to many pastors who said this. If you say that from the pulpit, people look at you like you're a weirdo. Here's the exact quote. It was the result of having multiple pastors tell me, essentially, the same story about quoting the Sermon on the Mount, parenthetically in their preaching, turn the other cheek. And to have someone come up after to say, where did you get those liberal talking points? And what was alarming to me is that in most of these scenarios, when the pastor would say, I am literally quoting Jesus Christ, the response would not be, I apologize. The response would be, yes, but that doesn't work anymore. That's weak. And when we get to the point where the teachings of Jesus himself are seen as subversive to us, then we're in a crisis.
That's interesting.
It is. And I saw so many headlines about this exact line, because, of course, the headlines are all like, Jesus is weak, say evangelicals.
Which is a fair pull quote, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, they'll put weak in quotation marks. But that is what Russell Moore was saying.
I remember back in 2014. 2015 when the Trump everything was starting to ramp up. I want to say maybe This American Life, there was a priest who went on and was kind of bemoaning this thing of like, I don't recognize my parishioners anymore. I don't know what their values are, and I don't know where that's coming from. I'm very curious if it's the same guy or if it's just such a universal experience that
I don't know if Russell Moore was talking about that stuff back then. And I do want to quote a pastor who was saying pretty much what you're talking about. And I will say Russell Moore was sounding the alarm on Donald Trump in 2015 as well. But just to back up for a second, people like him are not totally unusual, even in their circles. Like, there are a small handful of white evangelicals, some of them in prominent positions, who are rock solid conservatives in every way we would consider them to be, mm-hmm. but who have been disturbed by Donald Trump and how he basically took over their party, mm-hmm. their religion. The four criminal indictments now and a rape charge are not helping.
No.
Yeah. I mean, these people would almost certainly vote for any generic Republican. Mm-hmm. Just throw a body at me, I'll vote for it. But Trump gives them pause. Mm-hmm. Like I said, not a bunch of them.
Right.
Just
not
some.
Enough.
80% of white evangelicals, roughly, voted for Trump in 2016 and again in 2020. But it's a little different, and this is what you were referring to when we're talking about pastors who are saying, you guys, let's focus on Jesus or, you know, basic human decency. And then they realize their churches want nothing to do with any of it. So maybe this is some version of what you're talking about, but it wasn't from 2015. Last year, the New York Times spoke with a couple of pastors. One of them, his name was Kevin Thompson. He was an Arkansas pastor. He was basically booted out of his church, pressured out of his church for not being MAGA enough. Mm. You know, if he spoke against abortion, he said, like, they had no problem with it because everyone was anti-abortion. Right. They saw that as a matter of biblical truth. Mm. But if he spoke about race in ways that made his church uncomfortable, they considered that politics and not biblical. And Mr. Thompson suspected it was proof to some church members that he was not as conservative as they thought. And this kind of snowballed after a while to the point where he's like, "This, I don't recognize this church anymore, even though it's my church. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave." Mm-hmm. So Russell Moore has had a front row seat to the shift because he's been in positions of power in conservative white evangelical circles for several years. So when he says he's concerned, okay, it's something coming from him. NPR said, like, what do you think is the cause of this political problem where so many of these white evangelicals are very Trumpy? His answer was disconnection, loneliness, sense of alienation. Like, a lot of these guys feel lonely and ignored, and so Trump gives them someone who they think is looking out for them. I think that's where he was going with that. I think there's some truth to that, but I think he's missing the more obvious red flags. This is where I appreciate what he said, but also, dude, look in the mirror, okay? Mm-hmm. Because people like him have spent decades embracing right-wing extremism.
Right.
Opposed LGBTQ rights, opposed abortion rights, no exceptions. Mm-hmm. Opposed public schools teaching sex education and books that might be challenging and science. They oppose public schools, period. I mean, these are not recent. Mm-hmm. They've been doing this stuff for decades. Those of us who are old and remember the George W. Bush administration, mm-hmm. it's not like conservative Christians, white evangelicals were like sane and rational and reasonable back then. Mm-hmm. They were batshit crazy then too with their political ideas. So this is not new. But I think here's the why I'm mad at Moore about this for not recognizing this. When a president comes around, and instead of doing what most politicians used to do, which is to say, they pay them lip service, mm-hmm. they say, I appreciate you because you're a person of God, mm-hmm. and so am I, great. We all in America believe in the Christian God, and everyone else can shut up. Finally, someone comes around in 2015, and says, yeah, you guys are morally right. I'm going to put you in positions of power so you can push these views on everybody else. I'll nominate judges who are the crazies you want me to nominate. Mm-hmm. Of course they embrace the guy.
Yeah.
Like, Trump did what no politician in a position of power had ever done before, which is give evangelical Christians, white evangelicals, like, everything they wanted, mm-hmm. So now for Russell Moore to say, I can't believe these people are too Trumpy and they see Jesus as weak. This is what you wanted.
It's very much, I never thought the face-eating leopards party would ever eat my face. Like, it's like he set this thing in motion with no... Honestly, I feel like a lot of issues that have come up time and time and again with sort of the evangelical right movement is a lack of any kind of forethought or future planning. It seems to me to be very much like what feels good now. Right now we're angry and whatever. Yeah.
I think a lot of politicians for years, they could always truthfully tell their Republican base, like, sure, I am with you in principle. Of course, women who have abortions should be put to death or whatever they like to do. But I don't have the power to enact those laws. I would if I could. You just need to elect more of me.
Right.
But I can't do it. And then Trump's like, oh, you want crazy judges? I got a whole bunch of them for you. Oh, you want to sit next to me in the Oval Office and put your hand on my shoulder and, you know, say
pretend
magical incantations? Like, right there. You want me to gas these protesters so I can stand in front of a church?
Right.
Done. So again, this is what Moore wanted.
But that's kind of what I'm trying to drive toward is that they want what they want now. They want to outlaw abortion. They want to make things worse for Black people for whatever reason, as if they have it easy now. All of these things because they want right now. They want power, they want money, they want whatever right now. And it seems to me that not a single one of them has any kind of long-term game plan in terms of like, okay, well, what's going to happen when we do get Roe v. Wade overturned? Are people going to be mad about it and maybe abandon our cause? Uh-oh. Like, truly,
are we going to have a way to take care of these kids? Are we going to push for help for those people who probably wanted an abortion, couldn't get it, don't have the resources? What are we doing to help them? They didn't have any of their shit in order.
And so I think that's the thing that kills me about sort of the evangelical movement in general is they want all this power, but they also believe or say they believe and govern as if Jesus is going to come back tomorrow and start the apocalypse or however
he'll
that
clean
works.
Up our mess by like, destroying the earth and taking us with him first.
How can we put people in charge who genuinely don't care about the future because they don't believe it exists?
Yeah. Climate change.
And why do they want
to
be in charge if they don't believe the future exists?
And don't believe the government should be doing anything. That always bothers me about Republicans specifically.
Really,
I hate the government. I want to destroy the government. Let me be your president.
I mean, I think Newt Gingrich was the original troll, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm going to get as much power as I can in order to dismantle said power. Like,
right.
He's just a fucking twerp.
So, to Moore's credit, like, this is a guy who called on Trump to resign before his term ended in 2020. He said 2021.
What was the inciting thing that made him?
The insurrection. And Moore said he needs to leave now, like a couple weeks. I mean, it took that long.
Yeah, I did a pretty big eye roll that Hammett just responded to. Like, oh, yeah, it took you till January 2020 to realize
21.
That maybe... 2021?
To realize maybe this guy isn't great.
Isn't so great?
Russell Moore said he would have voted for Trump's second impeachment if he was in Congress, but not the first.
Who fucking cares, dog?
Right. The implication is that... If more evangelicals...
Is that a brag, by the way?
Yeah, he thinks that's a brag.
That's not
the implication
a brag.
Is that if
just
more...
holding truth as something that's important, which I thought was the whole fucking thing.
That means Russell Moore would have been fine with Trump extorting Ukraine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he doesn't
But the insurrection was annoying.
He's mad because he lost all his buddies. He doesn't give a shit about the state of the country.
The implication is that if more white evangelicals shared Russell Moore's views, the future of conservative Christianity would be a lot stronger. I think that's what he thinks. I think that's a fair assessment. Assessment
and
of where he thinks he's going. The problem is that Moore's views are the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Trump only like shone a spotlight on them and gave them the issues, but like the problems were their beliefs. Like, yeah, Moore might embrace whatever Jesus said somewhat more than others who share his label, but he's on board with all the bigotry and all the other horrific things. He is still, by the way, Russell Moore. Still anti-LGBTQ rights, still thinks women should be forced to give birth against their will. Mm-hmm. He has said he defends pro-Trump Christians who voted their conscience as if any of those people had a conscience, they were guided by rationality or heartfeltness.
So what you're saying is he's 99% on board with everything Trump did, but he just doesn't like the red hat?
And he doesn't like the insurrection, which, but that wasn't all, buddy. Here's where it gets even weirder. In 2021...
Well, now it's harming him personally.
Remember when he left the Southern Baptist Convention? In 2021, he joined a church that was not affiliated with the SBC, which maybe that's a shift toward a more progressive form of Christianity. Maybe that's good. Mm. But that new church, which is called Emmanuel Nashville, had at least one pastor who supported a known abuser. That church also signed on to something called the Nashville Statement, which we've talked about in the past, which is one of the most vicious anti-LGBTQ documents you will ever read. And by the way, the same church also believes only qualified men can hold leadership roles. That's the new church this guy signed on to, saying, oh, the SBC is a little too Trumpy here.
Right.
Let me join another. Here we go. These are my people. It's like, this is also bad. He's like the best apple in a rotting orchard. It's not saying very much about you that this is the best you can do.
I think this is another incident of, what's it called, the narcissism of small differences. Like, the people you tend to dislike tend to be very similar to you, except for maybe one thing. Uh-huh. And I feel like that's what I'm seeing here is like, oh, fuck Trump. I hate everything he stands for, except for all the things that I actually agree with. But fuck Trump.
Right.
Like, the fact that he is blind to the fact that Trump did all the things that he wanted him to do, but just under a bad guise.
Yeah, he doesn't say it nicely. Russell Moore will always couch this stuff in more palatable language.
Yeah.
So it always sounds like he's saying something smart and wise and useful. And then it's like, but you're saying the same horrible bigoted stuff.
Just religion.
Yeah. Russell Moore seems to think our country would be in a better place if Christian leaders, you know, volunteered at a food pantry before telling middle school rape victims to give birth. By the way, Christianity Today, which again, I know some of their news people, they do good work, but their opinion side is their opinion side. Their opinion side believes committed gay and lesbian couples are, and I'm quoting, destructive to society. Mm. That's the group he now leads. So if you're just delivering...
Just really quick. Married gay couples...
Josh Duggar, fine.
Are better than Christians who stormed the Capitol.
He
is still pointing to.
But if they're
his
married,
publication is pointing to.
But if they're married,
that the true evil is married lesbians.
Yes, that's correct. If you look at the
I
pyramid,
know several sets of married lesbians. I don't think you guys have to worry about them coming for you.
You remember how Mad Magazine has that fold in the back of every issue that you could fool.
Okay, well,
it was
born in the 1980s,
oh my
not
God.
The 1940s.
Thank
so.
You. So Christianity Today, in the back of its magazine, should come out with like a little pyramid of order, like hierarchy, like straight, married, white couples at the top.
At the top. With
lesbian.
Children, with children.
Of course. Unmarried women. Fun at the bottom of the pyramid.
God help them, they have cats.
Uh-huh. Lesbian couples. I mean, maybe every month you would like see the rankings and you could see like a billboard chart
like,
change.
Who's the most dangerous person?
Yes.
Right now, so like this last 6 months, it's been drag queens,
right?
But maybe we're
but they've fallen off
toward
the charts this week because we're going after someone who promoted
we're
Bud
shifting
Light
towards the Birkenstock and Subaru set.
Yes.
Okay, like
listen,
this.
Christianity.
I like this idea.
Christianity Today. Get on that, and if you don't want to, I will get on that
TM. You cannot make money off this. It's our idea.
Got it. Yes.
Friendly Atheist Incorporated.
Right. Yes. If anything, I might argue Trump is actually an easy target for Moore because he allows people like Moore to point to him, Trump, as the problem with what happened to their religion when the problems existed long before that.
Yep.
Like, Trump followed these people. It wasn't the other way around.
Yeah, do you think Trump has any original ideas besides being racist? He doesn't.
He looks at where the power is and he's like, all right, I'll just do
what
they want. Yeah. What I don't get about the Republican other presidential nominees is none of them seem to understand how Trump plays the game. Like Ron DeSantis's debate tips were leaked today and it's basically don't go after Trump. It's like, are you aware you're supposed to try to beat him, but his entire strategy is go after like the third place guy. Don't go after the guy in first.
This is interesting.
That's
this
next Wednesday, by the way.
I've
we'll get
heard.
To
Oh, boy.
We'll get to talk about the first debate next week. But yeah, like, none of them will attack Trump except Chris Christie, who's just like, I can get on stage and I can go kamikaze, but no one's going to like
Christie
me.
Chris Christie is really rowing his own canoe at this point. Hey, oh, he is not following any sort of anything.
Let him throw bombs for the primaries for a few weeks and then quit. It'll be fine.
We do need more chaotic neutral elements in the Republican Party because they're so full of lawful evil. So I really think that Chris Christie is going to be our guy to watch this week.
Oh, it'll be fine. Because everyone else is just like, what they're doing to Trump is not good because Trump is great. It's like, well, then I'll vote for him and not you.
Yeah, I'm confused.
Like
how
two brown people on stage and Tim Scott.
There's a second brown person? Nikki Haley and the other Vivek. Oh, boy. Oh. These poor kids.
And all of them love Trump.
Finally,
they all love Trump.
On the Republican
no,
side.
They are
I mean,
not representation.
Proud? Yes, sweet.
They do not represent my people.
Brown lives matter.
Stop it. Those are not my people.
I cannot believe we're
Pete
in debate
Buttigieg
season.
Is my people compared to them.
Yeah, you really are more aligned with the Pete Buttigieg than any of the brown guys over on the right. How does one enter a political race when the he's not the incumbent. What do you call it?
No, he's the guy beating their asses is the answer.
Well, but regardless, like you can't run against somebody who already has a statistical advantage because he's already been the president and hashtag name recognition.
Yeah, if you're going to run against him, say why you're better and he's not
why
better.
Why would you run against somebody who you can't criticize for fear of losing your people?
That's what everyone would like to know about Ron DeSantis's strategy.
I'm asking you. And you do this shit for a living, you tell
me. My advice to Ron DeSantis is exactly what his people are telling him. Oh, yeah, buddy, don't go after Trump. No. Just tell people how awesome things are in Florida with
you know
rising
that,
everything.
Did you know that there's a resurgence of leprosy in Central Florida? There sure is. Actually, they're trying to call it Myers disease, maybe?
They'll blame it on trans people. Give them a week.
Oh, they absolutely will. And truly, like, I would just listen to Sawbones about it. And truly, doctors are like, are they fucking armadillos in Central Florida? Because armadillos are the only animals who can also spread leprosy, which is a fun fact I happen to know off the top of my head.
I cannot wait. Like, again, stupid things for me to binge watch, but Republican debates, one of them.
Yeah, that might be. Ooh, do you want to watch together?
No.
Why?
I don't want to go out.
Oh, we can get lightly stoned and make fun of them. It'll be so much fun.
That's what I'm going to do already. That's a good segue. Let's talk about Baylor, because I don't think this story has gotten as much traction as I think
Baylor
it deserves to get.
Baylor
the college. What do you know about Baylor University?
Honestly, I'm surprised I knew it was a college. Do they have a strong neuroscience program?
Maybe. I think pretty much every college I've ever heard of will claim dibs on, we have a strong neuroscience everything.
Sure.
I'm sure they do. A private Baptist school in Waco, Texas. They do sports ball of many flavors. Mm-hmm. But here's what's...
It's in Waco. I would have bet my life that it was a Northeastern college. It sounded very, like... upper crust. We're going to Baylor.
Yeah. Well, here's what happened this week. I'll give you the top line, then I'll dig into this. The Department of Education this week, not this week, recently, the Department of Education, the Biden administration told Baylor this week, you have permission to ignore the anti-discrimination rules we make everyone obey.
Because
you say it violates your religious beliefs.
And Baylor is a public?
It's a private school, the federal government does give money to private schools for secular reasons.
Okay.
For example, they say, hey, we have, I'm making this up, but like we have professors who want to do research into this thing. Well, that happens at a lot of colleges, right? Like they have professors who want to do this research and maybe it moves forward on something the government wants to study.
Sure.
They can give grant money to those schools. Baylor has grant money for a lot of different things. Students who go there can file their FAFSA and get federal aid for school, all that. So the federal government can give money to Waco and Waco students in ways that don't necessarily further their religious goals. But the basic rules are, for anyone who wants federal money, whether you're public or private, you do have to obey some basic ground rules. One of them is, You got to take sexual harassment complaints seriously.
But that's so much work
and
for boys to do.
And that is what Baylor said. Sorry, we cannot get on board with that. And then the government recently said, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Wait, okay, I'm so
that's
sorry.
The story.
I thought we were drilling towards, like, anti-gay laws.
Oh, it kind of is a mix. So here's, let me give you some
wait,
more details
wait,
here.
Hold the fucking phone. You are telling me.
I'll move
me
a step down for you. As in, like, the next level of this.
Okay, yeah.
Baylor asked the government, can we be exempt from the sexual harassment provision of Title IX, which normally holds school accountable if they, for such violations? Like, okay, sexual harassment happens everywhere. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
It is your job as a college to investigate it, to make sure you take action if your college believes a line was crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because the government can't do this for every school.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, if we don't think you're taking it seriously, yeah, we can withhold federal funding. Baylor said, please don't do that in the case of sexual harassment. And the government said, sure, why not?
My fight or flight has been activated,
yes.
And I am feeling very tense and unhappy.
Uh-huh. Oh, it'll get there. It'll keep going.
Okay.
So Baylor's now the first school to uh-huh. receive an exemption that will allow it to keep receiving taxpayer dollars, even though it's allowing certain kinds
imagine
of anti-LGBTQ
waking up
harassment.
In the morning and saying, today's the day. Today's the day I am finally going to make sure that victims of harassment get no support from my college and there are no reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
Repercussions.
There we go.
Got it.
So here's the backstory here, because this is important, because I did not see these specifics in a lot of news stories about
what
it. In 2021,
people.
There was a student at the school. She has since graduated. But a former student, her name is Veronica, I think, Penales. She filed a lawsuit against Baylor, and actually there were a lot of other plaintiffs joining this lawsuit against their schools, and in her specific case, she wanted the government to end its, quote, complicity in the abuses and unsafe conditions thousands of LGBTQ plus students endure at hundreds of taxpayer-funded religious colleges and universities.
Mm-hmm.
So these students, like a couple dozen of them, I think, all said, our religious schools get taxpayer money for secular reasons, but also we are unsafe here as LGBTQ students. So, hey, government, do something about this. Don't give them a reward in the sense of federal funding if they're going to keep doing this.
Mm.
That case is still ongoing. We don't have a resolution on that case. But what she said in the lawsuit is that when she was 19 and a student at Baylor, she was harassed on campus and online because she is queer.
Mm.
Specifically, this is what I didn't see in a lot of articles. Someone left a Bible outside her dorm room with all the anti-LGBTQ
Jesus
passages
Christ.
Highlighted
Christ.
And put a note on the Bible that said, I'm praying for you. Is that harassment? Is
yes.
that religion? This
yes.
is the question at the heart
yes.
of this controversy.
Yes, yes that's harassment.
Another
yes, that's
student.
That's harassment, Hemant. Hemant, that's
stick
harassment.
A pin in that. We
because
will come back to
I
it.
I put a Bible at your door and
yes.
highlighted all the passages where they say that dark skin is bad,
mm-hmm.
I think it would be pretty easy for us to connect the dots and say, hey, that's racist.
And keep in mind, the anti-LGBTQ passages in the Bible say things like, if you are guilty of doing this,
death.
We're going to execute you. The government should execute you. All the hate preachers left and right that I've been posting clips of on Twitter,
yeah.
that's their whole game, where it's like, well, Leviticus says if we had a righteous government, anyone guilty of being gay and acting on it would get executed by the government.
Finally.
So those are the passages someone highlighted and put in front of a dorm room. With a little note. Another student left post-it notes on her door that just had three letters on it. F-A-G. Yeah.
We're still doing this?
We're still doing this.
We're still...
So this is what she had to deal with on campus, right? I don't even get that second one. There's no Bible involved in that. That's a straight up just putting a slur on someone's door.
That's just a classic hate crime.
Yeah. It turns out there's a few more things that were mentioned as well. Students at the school kept trying to start an LGBTQ student group. They called it Gamma Alpha Upsilon,
cute.
Which in Greek would spell gay. But their request was repeatedly denied.
By
the school. Mm. They said, you can meet, but we're not going to sanction you. We're not going to call you an official organization of the school.
Mm.
And I will say, part of me is like, well, Baylor is a religious school. They have the right to say whatever they want to say.
This a lot,
we've
though.
Talked about that. But okay, they said that's another part of the pattern against LGBTQ students. They also, the school can set its regard here. The students who go there say, we don't see any of this as contradictory to Baylor's religious mission, because even though Baylor is a religious school that is Baptist, that opposes same-sex marriage, they have a policy in place for that, and they oppose sexual relationships of all kinds outside of marriage, and that includes same-sex intimacy within marriage, of course.
Sure.
They also said they forbid student groups from promoting ideas that are contrary to biblical teaching. And
like
the students
putting fag on somebody's door.
Yeah. Well, the students were basically saying our student group isn't violating Bible what the Bible says, because meeting as openly gay people, we're not violating the rules of the school. So, like, we're not going against your rules. Why are you rejecting our group?
Because even I guess if you're gonna go this route, even the Bible doesn't say gay people, you can't have sexual attraction to somebody of your same
gender,
right?
You can't act on it, and that's the fundamentalist and evangelical line.
Which again is absolute garbage. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but her point stands well as if we're just standing around talking, that's nothing.
Yeah. We just exist. Why are you mad at us about that? Because we want to talk about issues as students.
Listen, this is a person who is both queer and identifies as a woman. They get why they have to explain themselves and why they feel like they need to be safe and have community.
So again, all of these things were happening. This is stuff she Pinellas mentioned in her part of the lawsuit, but this is happening at religious schools across the country. And she even said in the lawsuit, she eventually stopped reporting incidents to the school because the response was always, wait for it, she should go to counseling. She should. Not the people who put Post-its on her door.
Yeah. Everything.
So, like I said, that lawsuit has not yet...
Something so lousy happened in Waco, a place where nothing bad
has ever happened there. So that lawsuit has not been resolved.
Religious people being monsters in Waco? Who's ever heard of such a thing?
So
next, you're going to tell me the police are going to firebomb the school for no specific reason.
There's like three people who don't know the reference.
I know, gang.
And it's great.
Just look it up.
Google Waco. Okay. So
there's a miniseries and a documentary series and like 45 things on YouTube. Don't worry.
This past May, even though the lawsuit's still ongoing, has been for like 2 years now, this past May, the school's president, Linda Livingstone, filed a formal...
A lady is a president of a school? I thought women couldn't be in leadership roles in this special Christian baptism place. Hemet, explain yourself.
I don't know, but Russell Moore probably is a fan of hers. I don't know. She filed a formal request with the Department of Education basically saying, hey, while this lawsuit's kind of like going on, we wanted to just step in and say, hey, Department of Education, can we get an exemption from the Title IX rules? Because your rules force us to violate our religious beliefs. This gets a little wordy, but I'm going to boil down what her letter said to the Department of Education.
Department of Education was like, yep.
Well, we're getting there. Yeah. But here's her letter to them. The Office for Civil Rights Complaints. Oh, I should say the Department of Education, in addition to Veronica, the girl, the woman I mentioned, they also got other complaints about other stuff. And the Department of Ed said, hey, Baylor, what is going on here? Do we need to come over there? Do we need to investigate this? She is now responding to their letter to her saying, we got some complaints we got to talk about, separate from the lawsuit.
Okay.
And she says, the complaints at issue here allege that Baylor violated the Office for Civil Rights Title IX regulations, specifically in three situations. The university's alleged decision to basically say no to that gay student group. That's one of them. So she said, students complained that we wouldn't let them start the student group.
Right.
So I want to address that. She said, I want to address the university's alleged response to notice that students were subjected to harassment based on their sexual orientation and or gender identity. This gets into the stuff Veronica mentioned earlier with the Bible at her door and the Post-it notes.
I like that they say alleged. That's always a fun way to phrase things.
Yeah. And the third thing she mentioned, which I hadn't even known was a thing, but she mentioned the university's alleged decision to pressure university media to not report on LGBTQ events and protests in September and October of 2021. I guess that year there were protests about how the school was dealing with LGBTQ issues, and the school's response was, hey, student newspaper that works at our school, don't cover it. Don't go there. Don't write about it.
We'll just
pretend it didn't happen. Liberty University did the same thing back in the day. I don't remember what year that was.
Yeah, but because they're all fascists. Like, they're all cosplaying fascists.
This has nothing to do with promoting any of this stuff.
Yes,
but
it
the
does.
Students wanted to cover the news. And the school said, well, the news might, I don't know, make gay people look normal.
Yeah,
can't have that.
The truth has a well-known liberal bias. And that is what they are trying to evolve. When you are on the wrong side of every moral quandary, and you know it, and you know there's no justifying what you can do to any kind of outside world, then your solution is to quash it. And that's what they're doing. This is like dictatorial. It's so fucked. I can't. Don't report on the protests.
Don't report on the protests.
I mean, I was looking, Third Reich?
I was looking for more information on those. I swear I could not find more details on that because I really wanted
to.
Insidious.
So
I apologize if I didn't look hard enough there. But
you're a college. You're supposed to be seeking out knowledge.
Yeah. I would argue that the decision to say no to a student group, no matter what type it was, is within the school's right to do, even if it's a stupid decision.
Sure.
I would say censoring their student newspaper, stupid idea. It's within the school's right to do. I don't think it's a good journalism program, and I think if you graduate from there, that employ you should look twice if they see Baylor on your resume.
It says very clearly that we don't care about truth or journalism or whatever. We care about protecting our own ass, which is maybe not a good lesson for journalists
absolutely.
To learn.
And I'm arguing, you're right, and the school has a right to do that. And I think everyone should know the school is doing that. Okay, but that second one, our response to the harassment, and they called it sexual harassment because it has to do with their sexual orientation.
Sure.
I don't think you get an exemption for that because that's not something you could say, well, we're Christian, so sexual harassment, harassing LGBTQ people, that doesn't seem like something you ought to be able to say. Just because the harassment is wrapped up in Bible speak, like that Bible outside the woman's door, that doesn't make it acceptable. And I would also argue the post-it notes on her door have nothing to do with religion. So why are you covering up for that?
I would argue that the Bible, it's a dumb argument, the Bible has nothing to do with religion, but the motivation for leaving a Bible like that in front of somebody's door is not to...
You're not having a theological debate there.
Yeah, you're not here to spread the word of Jesus. You're here to make that person feel uncomfortable and unwelcome.
Yeah. So on July 25th, a few weeks ago, this is what made news, but not even at first because no one knew it happened. Mm. The Department of Education wrote back to Baylor and basically said, yeah, okay. So here's what they said. They said Baylor has the right to impose its religious beliefs when it comes to things like admission, who you give financial assistance to. Mm. And you know what? No one was challenging any of that. Like, yeah, you're a religious private school. You can do a lot of things that other public schools could not and should not do. But the Department of Ed also said that applied to sexual harassment, at least when harassment means Christians using their faith to demonize LGBTQ people. And here's what it said. Like, there was a list of things the school is allowed to do. These are, you can use religion when it comes to admission, rules for private organizations, like student groups, recruitment in who you go after to come to your school. That's fine. And then sexual harassment. And then there was a little footnote. And if you go to the footnote, it says, specifically, the university requests assurance that the belief in or practice of its religious tenets by the university or its students would not constitute unwelcome conduct under the department's definition of sexual harassment under Title IX. Basically saying, if the Department of Education might say, hey, what's going on to these students at these schools is unwelcome conduct, it's harassment, but the school says, but if it happened in a way that other students, the supposed suspects, said, well, I was just practicing my faith, what happens when those two clash? And the Department of Ed said specifically, Baylor is exempt from these provisions to the extent that they are inconsistent with the university's religious tenets. I will add one little thing there. The Department of Education said, that doesn't give you carte blanche to just do whatever you want in the name of religion. We may still investigate some shit. But if it comes down to the idea that a student thought they were just expressing their Christianity, and that's what their decision is,
maybe if
we're not going to punish Baylor for that.
So maybe
but if we think there is sexual harassment going on or harassment of gay students and it doesn't have to do with the furtherance of a religious belief, the Department of Ed may punish Baylor. Okay.
I just think that if you have a religion in which you kind of preaching to other people can be realistically considered hate speech, maybe you should sort of like take a little look at your terrible religion also.
Right? Yeah.
I just learned something. I did a quick Google. Remember how I said I think they have a good neurosurgery program?
Uh-huh.
I know the head of the neurosurgery department, and he's one of the worst people I've ever worked with in my entire fucking life.
Lovely.
In fact, I believe he's the reason I got fired from that job.
Hey.
I hate him. Mikey, guess what? The guy who got me fired from the CNS, I think, is the head of this college that we're talking about right now. They decided that they don't want to investigate rapes, so it's a cool college all around.
They did not say that. Correction.
No, I think that's exactly what they said.
Not exactly what they said.
Yeah.
But bottom line is, like, for Baylor, this is Baylor's position now. Faith-based bigotry matters more to them. It should be a higher priority than the right of LGBTQ students at Baylor to have an educational experience free of harassment.
You know what we should do about that? We should start a podcast that dedicates itself to calling these assholes out. Wait, we're doing it. Say it again. Say it more. Baylor is willing to put people at risk of harassment and of sexual assault because...
Nope. Stopping you there. They didn't say that.
What did they say?
If it's harassment that is done in the name of religion and they can justify that this is a religious expression or something.
Okay. Well, God told me that all this lesbian needs is for me to put my dick in her.
So this is what's interesting.
Straight.
I feel...
Why don't you tell me if that's harassment?
Because both Baylor, probably, and by the way, we will get into it, because Baylor has been in the news for other sexual harassment like that. The Department of Ed, there's no indication they would let them get away with that. But they are clearly, like, here's the thing. Veronica's story that she told has not been resolved yet. My fear is with the letter that the Department of Ed now sent to Baylor, they're kind of saying, yeah, we wouldn't go after that. We wouldn't punish you
exactly
for that.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Right. So they are telling us, and particularly us as women, and particularly people who are queer, we are constantly being told that our safety and our happiness and our well-being is less important than X.
Yes.
And so once again, whether or not, Hemant, you want to take umbrage with me saying that they more or less condone rape on campus, which I understand why you think that's me taking it a step too far, I challenge you to find me a time when they persecuted a rapist. However, I'm so tired of the chunk of us that are considered bargaining chips. I'm really, really tired of it. I talk about it when we're talking about abortion and the Democrats, of that's the thing they're absolutely willing to throw by the wayside in order to get what they want. And I'm fucking done with this, because this is what it ends up looking like. The U.S. government is now sanctioning the fact that Christians think that harassing somebody because they want them to be Christian is cool.
Yeah.
So now what? So fucking now what, Hemant?
That's outside the scope of this show.
Who is there defending women? Who is there defending queer people? We are just going to keep getting thrown under the bus time and time again until this country disintegrates, because it turns out you cannot run an entire country with just rich white dudes.
Who are you madder at? Baylor for this position that is not surprising for Baylor, or the Biden administration for saying, yeah, we'll let you get away with faith-based sexual harassment in certain cases, but also we're still going to investigate them first. Like, opening the door for what's allowed. I can't decide who I'm more mad at. I think the Biden administration's trying to say, like, we're not anti-faith. Don't accuse us of that. But also, this is not the place to be doing that.
Yeah, this is the wrong battle to pick if your thing is that we respect religious beliefs.
And to anyone who is questioning, well, why would LGBTQ students go to a Christian school like this, which is a question they get all the time.
Also,
in this case,
people who ask that, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, these students would tell you they don't see a contradiction in being LGBTQ and being Christian. And there's nuance there, and it's like acting on it is a different story, but like none of them see a contradiction, or they might have other reasons to go to a private religious school.
I also have 6,000 other reasons that a person would go to that school.
Or they're your
not
parents.
Out to my parents. Your parents will only pay for education if it goes here. This is where you got a full ride scholarship. This is the only place that has your thing. You live near Waco for whatever reason and want to stay close to home. Guess what? It doesn't matter if you're fucking gay.
That's
you
not-
get to...
A green
go
light
live
for
your
harassment.
Life, do whatever. And I'm so fucking sick of people thinking that, like, people need special places to be themselves. But when you're in public, you have to homogenize. Like, it's so exhausting, and I'm fucking sick of it.
So Penales, after the Department of Ed sent that letter, the woman who got the harassment at Baylor, she said, quote, I know many will not feel safe returning to campus, and rightfully so. If Baylor believes it has a religious liberty right to allow us to be harassed, there truly are no protections left for us.
Right.
One official at the school responded to that statement and others like it, basically saying, you guys, everyone's saying this is some, I'm quoting, broad-based exception to sexual harassment, and that's not true. We're not giving a green light to all kinds of harassment. But the fair way of saying that then,
but some harassment.
Baylor has now enabled certain kinds of faith-based harassment if it makes LGBTQ students feel unsafe. Baylor says, yeah, we want to support some of that. We want to not be punished if we allow some of that in certain cases, which cases have yet to be determined. Like the bottom line is that the actions that may have constituted sexual harassment by any reasonable definition or harassment against LGBTQ people may now be permitted at Baylor if there's a religious component to it. And if the government agrees with Baylor's assessment there, mm-hmm. Baylor won't be penalized for ignoring it. Now, like I said, the Department of Ed said, we will still investigate allegations of harassment in order to determine if it falls under the exemption. But to me, that sounds like we will decide whether a pitch is a ball or a strike. Mm-hmm. And everyone else is like, why is this pitcher on the mound? They shouldn't be throwing the ball in the first place.
That's a good sports metaphor.
Right? Thank you. The department's letter to Baylor does not mean anything with Penales has been resolved, but it's like they kind of hinted at how they would treat that sort of story.
I guess,
and by the way, answer the thing I mentioned earlier, Baylor has a long history of sexual harassment problems. This is from Mother Jones. A 2017 lawsuit against the school alleged that members of the football team committed 52 acts of rape between 2011 and 2014. That lawsuit was settled later that year. In 2018, the school released a statement outlining its continued commitment to effectively addressing issues of sexual assault and interpersonal violence, including Title IX. But as of July 31st, the Department of Ed still has a Title IX investigation open on Baylor.
Cool.
So the fact that Baylor had to ask the government, hey, is bullying LGBTQ students okay in certain situations?
We're cool with it.
Yeah, that's telling. Like, if your school needs special permission to give more power to Christian bullies, maybe your priorities are messed up. Huh?
Yeah.
Just putting that out there.
Do you believe that there are, like, good people and, like, capital B bad people? Like, this is a thing I've been thinking about a lot in my own life in different situations that are not.
That's very philosophical, and I don't know how I would answer that.
It is very philosophical.
I would say no, gut instinct.
Yeah, I figured you would think that. I was just, I was having some conversations with my coworkers and the people who are above us who work for a nonprofit, and so ostensibly are quote unquote good people or whatever, are just constantly shitting on us, constantly. And I think I have talked myself into believing that, like, well, if you have a position of power and you're electing to, like, make people's lives under you worse, that makes you just, like, a bad person, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not going to respond. We're not going to I
fully agree. There's so many people that fall under that definition where their joy comes from putting each other down. I said this about this atheist who is online, who is hard in for Republicans, basically, where I've watched enough of his stuff just because I monitored stuff. And I'm like, I've never heard this person make a joke that wasn't at someone else's expense.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen this person laugh at something that didn't involve putting someone else down.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, And that's their whole vibe. And now imagine what happens if those people get power. And they do have power.
Well, and those, like, are the people who seek out power, right? Are, oh, the people, yeah, who, like, I mean, it's just...
Like, it's not enough for me to laugh at them. I want to make their lives worse. 100%.
Like, it's the psychopath test. They talk all about how, like, truly most CEOs have some sort of, like, psychopathy, because you cannot have empathy and be successful in business. Like, those two things do not compute. I don't know. I've just been kind of, I just keep running into certain people who are making my life miserable. And I've just kind of been sitting with that question of, like, is it okay to say, like, this person is,
see, let me tell you how to fix this.
Bad person.
Here's my solution to that. I just assume everyone is out to make me miserable.
Oh.
And then if anything nice happens, it's just a pleasant surprise. I just assume everything bad's going to happen all the time.
I've seen you smile 4 times since I've known you, so I'm not going to take your advice.
But that's my point exactly. I have a default. My default is only bad shit happens.
True.
Why? My motto in life is, why would anything good ever happen? And then I run with it. And it works.
I think the only reason this show works is because you have that outlook and so are just like a baseline for this, and I am allowed to have the emotion. This is like bonus episode shit.
It's a shitty story. Yeah, I know.
And you're not optimistic.
No. Why would I be optimistic?
But you have children.
Yeah, their future is screwed.
I feel
I'll be dead by then.
That's fair. Honestly, I think we talked about the bonus. I just want to say, I got to hang out with Kevin's kids again recently. They're so fun and weird. I like them so much. They make me laugh a lot. Anyway.
All right. Do you want the one light story I have for you?
Can we make that one last?
No, because the other two are going to be even more depressing, and you're not going to like them. So let's go to...
One...
Oh,
I see what's happening.
Don't worry.
Oh,
don't worry.
I usually don't eavesdrop on your notes, but there's so few of them.
There was a clip that went viral recently. Yeah, it's about Jumbotrons. Wait for it. There's a pastor named J.D. Greer, and he used to be the president of the Southern Baptist Convention. They have like 1 to 2 year terms. Well, he had a 2 year term recently during the pandemic. So this guy's name is J.D. Greer. He's also a pastor, like the lead pastor, at a place called Summit Church in North Carolina.
Okay.
And recently, he's giving one of his sermons at the end of July. And one of the things he talked about, and this was kind of an aside, a little bit of a tangent from what the purpose of the sermon actually was, but he got really mad at people, and he wanted to basically, and I somewhat playfully, criticize his own congregation. And he said at some point in there, like, the thing that annoys me a lot is some of you walk in late and leave early, right? And he's like, that's disrespectful. I'm going to play you this clip, and it's short, but we'll talk about it right after that, because there's a point to why I want to bring this up.
It's one of the things, honestly, that irritates me about you guys that cruise in 10 minutes late or leave 5 minutes before we dismiss. It's not that I'm mad that you're missing part of the service. It's that you treat church like a religious show instead of a welcoming family that you're a part of. When people say that the church is unfriendly and it feels like a big production, you're the problem.
Yikes. Sir, you're the one who's yelling at me right now.
He actually went on to say, I don't have it in that clip, don't even get me started on you guys that are still sitting at home in your pajamas streaming online when health-wise you can and should be back in church. Okay.
Sorry, can we take one step back and tell me how big this church is?
It's a mega church.
It has
multiple campuses, maybe like a dozen campuses.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So it's big.
And this is our big head honcho
This is
boy?
Our big head honcho guy. So, again, to recap, he's
fun.
I know. Granted, this is out of character for him, but he was mad about something, so that was him being
can
mad.
Can I push back on that?
Yeah, sure.
It's out of character for his public persona.
Sure,
I fucking guarantee
Thank you.
This is how he talks to his wife every night.
So he's mad that people are showing...
Guys, Kevin smiled again. It was amazing.
he's mad at people who show up late and leave early because, and I quote, you treat church like it's a religious show.
Which they put
on. And when people say the church is unfriendly and it feels like a big production, you're the problem because you treat it like a production and some of you watch it online and you don't have to. And here's what you didn't see. Because this is not on video. We're working on it. After he said all that stuff, the camera on him panned out. And what did we see in the big shot?
Half empty.
No.
Oh.
The crowd is full, But you see the drum set on stage. You see jumbotrons on either side of the guy. You see the movie screen behind him. Come around. Okay. Look at the zoomed out image I am looking at that happened after he said all this.
You think this is a production?
So it's a friggin' Broadway stage right there. It's huge. And
honestly,
so that
it's a
was
a similar color scheme to how Company was lit when I saw Broadway last year.
That's the reason this went viral, because the hypocrisy of the guy. Yeah, why do y'all treat this like a production? Zoom out, production. Hilarious.
Again, this is another great example of people who have no sense of like looking toward the future. We're going to make this huge, big show so everybody comes in. And now you're treating it like a huge, big show? Go fuck yourselves. Like, what?
By the way, if you go
also,
to...
Also, if you're streaming something online and then mad at people for streaming something online...
Thank you.
Look
yes.
inward.
Right there with you. I looked at the church's website because, like I said, they have multiple campuses, so they have a huge staff. Mm-hmm. They don't all just work at this one building. Their staff has a specific... Like, I could filter their staff by what... department they work in. There is a production department.
Of course there is. And there that shit does not have my accent.
And there are 22 people who work in their production department.
22?
That's how big this church is. But like, dude.
There's four people who run my entire stable.
There are 22 people who literally work to deliver productions every week. So stop complaining that people treat it like a production. By the way, there are also videos online. But I saw one estimate that said the church has an estimated $500,000 worth of equipment. And some of the companies that do electronics and say, you should hire us to install like your lights and your sound system and all that. In fact, you know, we worked at Summit Church for them. We did this for them and check out what it looks like. Mm. They're the poster child.
Yeah.
For the electronics company to say, hire us, because look what we did for the church, because look at their productions. So, like, yes, mega churches like his are meant to be a religious show. That's why the audio is always, like, uploaded and available immediately. The video looks amazing.
Yeah.
Every sermon, if you look, this blew me away. Every sermon's basically the same length to the minute.
Wow.
I know.
That's not easy
That's
to
impressive.
Do.
And there are multiple jumbotrons behind the pulpit. You could see the goddamn drum set on stage. Yes, and the disconnect between his words and what's actually happening
and
here.
Truly,
amazing.
From personal experience, my husband was a film major. And back in the day when he was trying to find, like, industry jobs, he was like, fucking every other thing was Christian. Like,
yeah.
they pour money into this shit. And
oh,
like,
my God, yeah.
I know people who have, like, God, we've talked about it on this very show, people who've worked on those kinds of things because it's like, they're the only ones who are hiring for, like, production
You're
shit.
A musician.
Yeah.
You're a background.
Vocal.
Yeah, backing vocal, vocals. Background musician and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, where can I find a gig right now? Mm-hmm. It might be a church. But it's the audacity of a preacher demanding that his clients consume the product the way he feels
is
appropriate.
It's so entitled.
Like, I don't care if you like or don't like Taylor Swift. She's never going to say, you can only enjoy my music in these situations at this time in this place.
I feel like there have been incidents of musical artists chastising audiences for being rude. But
not
truly,
the good
but
ones.
But also they're not priests. Like, they're not supposed to be spiritual like, leaders
if,
of people.
If Greer actually cared about church members working on his schedule,
uh-oh, here goes
then,
his type five.
Uh-huh. Latecomers wouldn't be allowed to get in. You could just shut the door at the time.
Have you ever been to a Broadway show? You can't get in after they
live
started.
Streaming would only be available for those who had, like, medical reasons or requested it for personal reasons.
Need a doctor's note?
Yeah. But it's not going to happen because the goal of these churches, mega churches, evangelical ones, is to broadcast the service to as many people as humanly possible. One commenter somewhere pointed this out. Don't want church treated like a production? Don't create a production.
Yeah.
Right? And honestly, given how fast Americans are running away from organized religion, he should be consider himself lucky anyone's watching at all.
Have you heard, or has anybody spoken up from that church to be like, hey, fuck you, dude? Because, like, I'm truly wondering.
You mean to him?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, if I'm sitting in that audience and I'm listening, where you know, I've shown up, I've done my thing, and my dude comes up and chastises me like I'm an eighth grader skipping study hall, that's not a good vibe that he's sending. I don't want to get scolded at church. Well, they do want to get scolded
think
at church
because
they're sinners.
Why would you be 5 minutes?
Maybe it's a domination
thing. Think about what might happen if you're 5 minutes late to church. That means you woke up, you probably ate breakfast really quickly, had to get your kids in the car, which is a whole ordeal, had to dodge traffic in Waco, and then you got to church and you were a few minutes late, but you made it because you thought this was important. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you wanted to beat traffic on the way home. Maybe the last 10 minutes of a service is the bullshit and announcements and money, and you don't care about
maybe
any of that stuff.
You have shit to do with your life.
But they showed up. And my God, if you're live streaming it, like actually live, live streaming it, you're putting this on your schedule. I want to show up to watch this live and not on video later on.
Yeah.
Like, Greer should be thanking all of those people, because like you are suggesting, it is so much easier to be like, well, if you don't respect me, guess what? I'll leave.
Yeah.
It's so much easier, and it's so much more fun, you guys.
I must hate going to see Dodgers games.
I've done that.
It's a joke about how the Dodgers fans come in the third inning and leave in the sixth inning.
Listen, I've been to Cubs games, and if the score is lopsided, I will tell my friends after the eighth inning, I'm out, bye.
I swear to God, my dad and I have the exact opposite views on that, because my entire fucking life, he was that. Cubs are losing, fuck it. Like, we're leaving, whatever. And it's always Cubs are losing because they're the Cubs.
Of course.
And I think one time, maybe I missed something kind of cool. And I have truly the world's most severe case of FOMO.
Yeah, yeah.
And finally, when I was old enough, so probably when I was 16 or 17, my dad would be like, okay, I'm going to the Dark Horse. Like, stay here as long as you want. I don't care. And then I would just find him afterward, because I do not understand how somebody cannot stay till the last second, because what if something really cool happens and you miss it? That's just sort of how my life functions.
Right.
Anyway.
So
it's just my funny joke about the Dodgers.
Greer has since responded to all the backlash he got, because it got back to him.
Did it?
And he put out a big...
From his own congregants or from outside? Do you know?
You know what? Definitely outside. I don't know from within.
I'm very curious about the congregants.
But he did say on Twitter or whatever it's called now, this is a direct quote, "This was a bit of family talk and is unhelpful out of context. I'm sorry for the confusion, ... That's all the important stuff.
So
this is a bit of family talk that he was...
reinforces my idea earlier that when he's quote-unquote never like this, he's never like this in public, and this is how he treats his family. Yeah.
Family talk. It's live-streamed to thousands of people.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Nope.
That this is obviously how he treats his family and his children. And so when he says family talk, he thinks...
This is how you talk to your family.
And it's okay because I'm their dad.
I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, you're right. Like, it's if that's what he calls family talk, But also, it's not family talk. This wasn't a private you and your church talking, because you know it's being broadcast to everybody. And also, I saw the context. I watched the context. It was not better in context.
Is there a better nothing excuse? Okay. Really quick. Think of any excuse you can think of that's better than it was taken out of context.
Trump does that all the time, right? Like, you're taking these things I said, like, commit the crimes, and it's out of context.
Is there any better, like, complete wave off of criticism than, oh, it was out of context?
This is why I appreciate so many of those Right Wing Watch, Media Matters places, because they do provide it's always like, it's never a 4-second clip of Republicans saying something stupid. It's always 30 seconds, minute, 2 minutes, because you get to watch the horrible things they say, and you realize, oh, this isn't a slip of the tongue. This is what they meant.
Well, and it really goes by the thing that I've heard people say about the Republican Party or Trump generally, is that every accusation is a confession.
Oh, yeah. It's all projection with them.
Yeah, 100%. So, assholes.
Like I said, if he doesn't like people showing up late, just wait till they stop showing it all.
Well, and also there's, as somebody who teaches students, there's better ways to get your message across than being a fucking prick.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you try doing something interesting in the first few minutes and at the very end, and instead of, like, just slow walking into your point?
It's called value add, my dude. Mm-hmm. You gotta earn that share.
Give me a minute-by-minute schedule, because I know you have it, because that's how these sermons are to the minute, too.
I bet that shit is tight as a drum. Mm-hmm. I bet there is nary a foot stepped out of place, nary a false note. I bet it is tight as hell. And I frankly have to respect that. Again, Mussolini trains, etc. You know, you get the thing done. There's some impression there, right?
Yes, exactly. Did you hear, I'm going to skip ahead to this other story, which we're back to the disturbing part of the podcast.
Oh.
Did you hear that in the Rio Grande River in Texas, on the border,
Texas divides Texas from Mexico.
Thank you. The state of Texas put buoys in to block refugees from crossing the river.
Like Jesus would?
Yes. And between those buoys are what?
Sharks.
Circular saw blades.
No!
Yes.
I covered the mic early enough.
You
because
did.
Otherwise I screamed.
Circular saw blades just to be extra cruel
the
to any refugees who may try
the
to do
point.
It. So here's the reason I bring this
These
up.
People are monsters.
In defense of the death blades, the refugee death blades, a bunch of Republicans filed an amicus brief in defense of what Texas is doing.
Remind me what amicus brief is.
Hey, we are not part of this lawsuit, but we like what they're doing. And they said, hey, courts, you should agree with Texas and the death blades.
Who's suing
Texas? I'm getting there.
Oh, okay.
Because Noah's Ark is where they went with this. They cited Noah's Ark in defense of the death blades. So I will tell you why, because there's no way in hell you're going to figure this out.
I know this absolutely.
Yes.
In the Bible, God had to kill basically 99.99999% of the human race because they were sinners, and only Noah was saved because he was God's chosen one, and therefore, if you die in the water, it is indicative that you are a sinner, and sometimes people have to die to create this new world for us all.
Yes.
Am I close?
Not even.
Really?
So, here's the way this works. I will try to explain this as a non-lawyer. The Justice Department, which says no death blades, they sued the state.
For no death blade proper.
The Justice Department sued Texas, basically saying you can't put a structure or an obstacle in a federal river, basically.
This isn't a one tough mutter race, gang. These are people trying to save their own lives.
The law says, and this is what the Justice Department argued, you can't put a structure or an obstruction in a navigable river without our permission.
Okay.
And Texas put the buoys and the death blades in the Rio Grande without our permission.
I can't
That's
believe
it.
I guessed shark so, as a joke, and it's worse
not,
than shark.
And so the government's saying they violated the law. These buoys and death blades
yeah.
need to be removed.
And Texas is like, counterpoint, fuck you.
Yes.
Yep.
Texas responded. The Republicans defending Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, argued, well, this part of the Rio Grande is not navigable. You don't
then
see boats coming through this
buoys?
So we don't need, because boats can't cross it, but refugees are, so we need to murder them. So the Republicans defending Greg Abbott are saying this is not navigable, so the law doesn't apply.
Obviously
now,
it is navigable because people are trying to cross the river at that point, therefore they
sure.
need buoys and death saws.
And I will say there are actually other arguments that contradict their claim that this is not navigable.
Wait, the Republican Party isn't being intellectually dishonest to get their racist agenda through, are they?
Yeah. So, and by the way, there are many people who would say, even if you said it was not navigable, you still don't have the right to stick obstacles in this river overseen by the government. So here's how the Bible enters the picture. Because this week, several Republican lawmakers, part of the Texas Public Policy Foundation, some right-wing group, they were saying, like, we believe the courts should side with Texas and leave the death blades in. Why? Because you say you're debating whether or not this is navigable or not navigable, and the government says, well, if it's navigable, then we have control over it, and you can't do these things. So here's what they said. Well, when in the book of Genesis,
mm-hmm.
it says the entire world was once covered by water. And by that logic, the government could say everything is navigable and that would be unfair to us. Therefore, you should ignore what the government has to say. I'm not joking. That is their argument.
Wait.
I will read that again for you.
No. Don't
yes.
read it again because I think I got it the first
uh-huh.
time and I don't want to hear those words
uh-huh.
again. So they're saying that because at one point, according to the Bible, the
yeah.
whole world was flooded.
Yes.
Then technically any part of the world
was once navigable
now,
by boats large enough to carry significant amounts of livestock.
And therefore
Those stories would render any structure built anywhere in Texas an obstruction, and that would be unfair to us.
But nobody's suggesting they do that. They're just, I'm interested in where water is right now, which is the Rio Grande, which divides the United States and Mexico, which I haven't heard how Mexico feels about the Death Blades, but I feel like we didn't ask their opinion.
No one cares about their opinion in Texas. Slate's Mark Joseph Stern pointed out, this resort to young earth creationism should tip off the reader that Texas has no plausible legal argument in this case. And again, what are they doing? If you back up for a second, they're using the Bible to justify death saws against refugees trying to save their own lives.
That's
and really, that phrase, if one takes the book of Genesis literally, that's always a dead giveaway. That's they're about to say some crazy shit.
Big if. That if is doing a lot of heavy lifting.
Do you know what else is in Genesis? Incest, rape, genocide. Like, well, you're not supposed to take it literally.
Well, if you take The Lion, the Witch, and Wardrobe literally, then every closet actually goes to a magical Christmas land with a talking lion and a white witch and Mr. Tumnus, who wears a waistcoat.
Nice.
So legally, nobody can enter their closet without a passport. So that's what I am going to say, because if one takes The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe literally... then one cannot pass into a foreign land without one's passport.
Thank you. Just last week, do you remember we talked about that Trump-appointed judge who said, I have a historical example of God speaking to Adam in the Garden of Eden, and that's why lawyers for Southwest have to go through religious liberty training from a Christian
that.
Hate
has
group.
Has that changed?
Southwest has now filed a counter-motion saying, what the fuck are you doing, judge?
Really?
I don't know where it'll go, but they are fighting back against it.
Okay, well, I'm glad I'm a Southwest.
I should say, I'm saying it off the top of my head, I don't know if Southwest pushed back against it or, like, the government push back against it. We'll see. But I don't know where it's going yet.
Interesting.
But man, I didn't see Christian nationalism coming into play that way.
That's so devastating. It truly is such a neglect for care of humanity. It's horrible.
It is.
It's horrible.
It is. I got one last story for you.
Really?
And it involves Tennessee. The governor of Tennessee, his name is Bill Lee. He was elected in 2018, and he's basically made religion a centerpiece of his administration. Not surprising for a Republican in Tennessee. But now we found out that his Republican allies, because they have a legislative trifecta in Tennessee, they will be spending $1.2 million of taxpayer money to boost religious groups, and no one knows where this money is going or how it's being used. And here's what happened. Like, just to give you some background here on this guy before I get into the story, when COVID hit the state and Tennessee got hit especially bad.
Yeah.
Bill Lee, the governor, limited indoor gatherings to 10 people. But if you were a religious service, you didn't have to follow that rule.
Right.
So that's like having an umbrella with a hole in it. It doesn't work.
Honestly,
you can't do it's what's Neil deGrasse Tyson's thing. Like, it's like having a pool with a peeing section in the corner. Like, no,
well,
you can't
funny.
Just do that because everyone's affected. So one church responded to that by hosting a 3-day maskless New Year's Eve blowout.
I mean, listen, I've never wished death upon Christian people, but they seem to be wishing it upon themselves.
They took care of it in that case. Yeah.
Maybe that's why religion participation in religion is going down. They all fucking died.
Yeah, they are hurting themselves. Before vaccines were available, Bill Lee announced a plan to deal with the COVID crisis. Do you know what he did?
Ooh, sprayed hand sanitizer.
You're not
going
to believe how dumb this is.
The thing I said is pretty dumb.
It was dumb.
Okay.
He formed his Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives.
Sure.
And they started sending out prayers 3 times a week for 1 month.
3 times a week?
Yep, 12.
That's not even that much.
12 prayers total and no mask mandates.
I thought you were going to say 3 times a day. That's the minimum of prayers I need
nope.
to beat
like
COVID.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday prayers, hold off for the weekend. Back to you on Monday.
I mean, you got to take your Tuesday, Thursdays off, you know?
Of
it's
course.
For you.
It's God. He needs several days off. So months later, when Tennessee was suffering the most COVID-19 infections per capita in the nation, what did he do then? He declared a day of fasting and prayer.
hey, if you're fighting off an infection, you should put food in your body so your body has fuel to do the thing that you needed to do.
So he still has this Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, and it's always been a volunteer type of thing, or maybe private funding helped out or anything. But the thing is, there are ways a group like that could be beneficial because you want to bring together large communities, and there are secular reasons you may want to tap into religious communities to get out messages, to get their help, to raise funding for charity, things like that. They do fine work. They can do fine work without proselytizing. But there's no indication those groups are doing anything not secular. But here's the new thing. The budget for Tennessee, starting now, includes $1.2 million for this Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. $1.2 million. And according to the Tennessean newspaper, the money will go to hiring 5 new core staff members and 6 community liaisons. But outside of the plans to hire new staff, no one seems to know where the money's going. The government's office has no budget records detailing how the office will spend the money. There's no list of groups they've worked with, even as a non-funded organization. No records that explain why they need $1.2 million.
Like, and it's already been awarded?
Oh, yeah. It's budget stuff. Like the Republicans in Tennessee said, oh, religion wants money? Check. And they passed it.
Cool.
And it's legal. And so here's the thing.
Is it that they didn't have to justify what their budget was, or Republicans didn't care enough to listen?
I think it's the latter. Okay. I think they didn't care because no one, I mean, there would be a record of the office saying, well, we need X amount in our budget to pay for this. And again, if they're saying the money is going toward 11 staffers in various roles, okay, but then what are those staffers doing that requires them to be these paid positions? We don't know. So let's run down some things. This is from the Tennessean as well. They're not paying for social media because the Twitter account for the office hasn't been updated for a couple years. The Facebook page has been dead for nearly a year. No one on those pages, even when they were active, promoted anything except Christianity and Judaism. The volunteer board doesn't consist of anyone outside
and
those religions.
What do they say they're doing? They don't say anything. They're just hiring people to fart into chairs.
Yes. This is also from the Tennessean.
Somebody's got to do it. Those chairs aren't going to fart themselves.
As of August 11th, the website URL for the office redirects to a Malaysian lottery website.
What?
Like, what are they doing? That was my favorite part of the article.
Malaysian lottery.
I clicked on it. I went to the website for the office, and it looked like a spam page that opened up.
Oh, that's so good.
Yep.
Malaysia, too.
Very
what
specific.
A wonderful place to pick.
The executive director, his name is Lance Villio. He's the guy in charge of the office. He's now going to be making $165,000 a year and a $12,000 car allowance. And he said, that's just what happens when you have us. We have a small team. I got to get a lot of stuff done, which is shocking to anyone who does way more.
Who actually has a small team and has to get a lot
of
stuff done.
Exactly.
Gets paid minimum wage for it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I can't think of anybody in that situation.
His assistant makes $48,000 a year and apparently doesn't update
one
shit.
One third of, I don't want to talk
close
about
enough.
Pay discrepancy, but go ahead.
But yeah. So where's this money going? Like, which groups
to
are going
to
get the funding?
Hammond.
Which groups are going to get the funding? How will the office make sure one religion doesn't get preferential treatment and that smaller religions aren't left to fend for themselves? Well, the Tennessean found that of the 84 groups Villio met with since running the office, 3 of them were non-Christian, and meeting with them is a far cry from working with them. So what has she found? Like, what have they done since they were there? Here's what the Tennessean found.
Bought a yacht.
under its previous director, the office facilitated an initiative to encourage Tennesseans to pray for state leaders, which 900 people signed up for online, basically. It also drafted guidance for houses of worship to continue operating during the pandemic and hosted calls to help victims of natural disasters navigate applications for state and federal assistance. I will grant you, that's a good thing. I'm glad they ran a phone booth or a phone bank to help people who needed help during natural disasters, but that's one for, like, whatever else. The office also created a portal to map churches, nonprofits across the state, and started a podcast to feature nonprofit leaders. The podcast has not been updated since 2021.
Well, podcasts are hard to keep
last up. Last listener, the office also launched a Tennessee Hope Line to offer connection and encouragement for older adults.
Actually, I love that.
The phone number has been disconnected.
Oh, no!
Right?
Woo!
So
you got me there, Hammond.
Woo!
You sure got me.
Yep.
Oh, that's very funny.
So again, this goes back to, this is what they did when they were just, the governor said, you can form this group and you have my support. And if there are funds to raise, we'll raise them privately. Mm. And now they're getting taxpayer money to do what? They have 11 staffers now, or room for 11 staffers.
God, I'm
what
just
are they going to do with this?
The grant applications I have filled out and the hours of work I have put
in. We want money to do this good thing.
$500 for my barn so I can serve an underserved community. And these motherfuckers are taking $1.2 million and shitting on it.
Well, when they're not kicking black people out of their legislature.
Oh, my God. Truly, there are days like today that I feel like the inequity is more than my little brain can handle. I just don't know. I don't know.
This is what happens when you elect lots and lots of Republicans. No one is looking into this stuff.
My heart hurts so badly. I'm so tired and sad.
It is frustrating. And with that.
Oh, that's how you leave me?
I figured that's the happy note to end on.
Cool. Yep. Great.
You can find me at Hemant Mehta on whatever the thing is called now. You can find me on YouTube under Friendly Atheist. If you're near Canada, I assume all of Canada is near Toronto or something, but
that's
I will be in Ontario next week speaking at BahaCon, BahaCon.
Oh,
if
fun.
You Google BahaCon, you could find their information. What else? Thanks to anyone who watched The Atheist Experience last week. That's online now if you want to check that out.
How did that go?
It was fun.
We
can talk about it in bonus. And if you want to support this show, go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast. Donate whatever makes you feel happy.
Okay. Whoa.
Where do we find you?
I don't know. Really nowhere. I haven't been on whatever Twitter is now for a billion years. I'm on Facebook. I'm trying to get up on Discord, guys. Can you? I'm genuinely trying. I replaced, this is the place where my Twitter app used to be. And I replaced it with Discord as, a reflexive thing.
Yes.
So I kept accidentally opening it. But I just don't understand how it works. I can't
navigate.
Yeah,
you got to be part of the right
dumb.
Communities.
Wow. Okay, I was going to read this. Review, but look how long it is.
Oh, dear God.
So I'm not going to read that one.
I can't tell if that's good or bad.
It's five stars, so who gives a shit? So I'm going to read this one. Great show. I also, pathetically, I might add, put on Facebook, gang, it's not that I care what people think of me, but our star rating is starting to drop because of these really bad reviews that are mostly about me. So this is me just absolutely being an asshole and asking for compliments. Okay, this is from Deadhead Chip. Love that. Uh-huh. I look forward to listening to these two every Friday. Hammond is very intelligent, well-organized. His analysis of the issues discussed is usually on point and succinct. Jessica provides reactions, color commentary, and personal anecdotes that make this show work. Jessica is hilarious and smart and passionate. Tune in. You'll be glad you did, Chip.
Aw, thank
That's really
you.
That's nice, Chip. That's
very nice.
I'm going to read this whole long one from Stress
Save it
Technoid,
for bonus.
But not on. Oh, yeah, I'll read it on bonus because it's genuinely so very long.
All right, we will see you all bonus episode, otherwise next week. Have a good one.
Goodbye.